The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Tom Warner. Mr. Warner is a author and a UFO experiencer, and this interview was conducted via Zoom, which is how we're conducting all of our interviews for We Are Not Alone until WHFR opens up the recording studio because they've had it closed down for over a year now due to COVID concerns. Okay, Mr. Warner and Bill Konkoleski, the state director for Michigan MUFON, have graciously given me permission to air this interview on my show. So, with that said, let's listen in on the interview. Tom Warner was born in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and raised in his family historic 1835 Warner homestead. And not only is Tom the author of his debut and autobiography, Beyond the Stars, Tom is also a historian, poet, and artist. A self-taught watercolor artist, Tom was named on the American Gallery Greatest American Painters list. He also received the James Weldon Johnson Literary Foundation Legacy Award for stellar contribution to literature and the arts for his art and poetry. And recently, Tom was featured in the Netflix series Unsolved Mysteries, Berkshire UFO. And I saw that one, and it was very interesting. And here to tell us about it is Tom Warner. Welcome, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. And hello, everyone, Michigan MUFON. I appreciate you having me on and talking about all the different issues that go along with this particular subject.
We welcome you. And why don't you start by letting us know what happened on September the 1st, 1969, when you were, as my grandmother would say, just a young shit of a kid, 10 years old.
I was 10 years old. It was September 1st, 1969. You know, and I have to say that, you know, some of these bizarre incidences, this wasn't the first incident and it was far from the last, but it was definitely the most known of different ones because of that it was on Unsolved Mysteries. And, you know, that was the reboot of Unsolved Mysteries and the show went to number one on Netflix, which really blew a lot of people's minds. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was September 1st, 1969. It was Labor Day. It was a very, very unusually hot Labor Day that year. And we had finished up, we had gone swimming and all these things. And it was towards the end of the day. And I said to my mother, I said, can I go next door and call her? Because the neighbors, the Shaws, live directly, I'm pointing like directly this way to the next door neighbor's house. You know, I'm literally, I live in the same house this event actually took place. And so I went over and it was nothing unusual, you know, it was just Labor Day, nothing, nothing. And I was coloring with my friend Debbie, who was my neighbor. And all of a sudden I got this really just a strange feeling that was coming over me. And I walked over to the where there was a window to my left. And I looked out and I had this mental telepathy that says, you have to go home now. And I was like, I just looked at Debbie. I said, Debbie, I have to go home now. And Debbie goes, why? Is your mother calling you? And I'm like, no, I don't know what it is. Maybe it was God calling me from the clouds. I don't know. And I was like, I was just absolutely, adrenaline was filling my body. And I ran out of the room. And from that one room, you went into the, that was the living room, and you went into the kitchen part of the house. And the grandmother was at the window doing dishes, and there was the sink, and then off to her right was the window that you looked right out at our house. And her sister Jane was on the phone, and I said, I have to go home. And my expressions that I had on my particular, what I was showing, they had just fear over them, just looking at me. They didn't know what was wrong. And I bolted out of the house. And as soon as I hit that door and I was out, I had one thing in mind: to get home, sprint home as fast as I could. I just knew that there was, you know, something just didn't feel right. And as I was running across the driveway, all of a sudden I noticed all the sounds disappeared. In September in New England, the crickets are so loud, they literally can keep you up at night in September. And I'm sure it's the same in Michigan when you get those late September, the crickets are loud. And all the sounds just completely disappeared. And I just had a feeling something was off to my left. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was running, but I felt like I was like in slow motion. Everything went in a slow motion to the point where it was like tick, 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 tick. And my hands jerked back and a UFO dropped right out of the sky. And a beam was on me. My hands were like back like that. And it's like, you know, if you were swimming and you come up out of the water and you gulp for air and I just one gulp. And it like took my breath away, and all of a sudden I'm now on a UFO. And it was like so surreal. I mean, I got to see the UFO. It was like within 35 feet of me. I got to see all the detail of it. There was, if I was to describe it, say 35, 40 feet would be an estimate, as knee high to a grasshopper 10-year-old would say, you know. And there was one section on the bottom was going one way, the next section was going the other way, and the third section was going another way. So the vehicle was actually going in different directions, spinning. I was close enough to where I could see the actual spin of it. And then there was like a band of lights that went around, and the colors were colors I've never seen before. I have, you know, if you ask me to describe a color, a red fire engine, everybody can say a red fire engine because we know what a red fire engine looks like, or the green alien over your shoulder there, you know, you can relate to that color, but these colors I'd never seen, just that they're unique colors.
Do you recall going up, up into the sky, up toward this UFO?
It was instant.
But
it was instant.
Even in that instant, you can recall these colors and.
I could see the
swirling.
Oh yeah, I saw all that just before it happened, mm-hmm. and then I was in this I can still see it. There's a girl off to my right who in the TV show, that was Melanie, who was, you know, she was recorded on and gave her testimony that she was on that ship. But she was in shock. I mean, the expression, what was most frightening to me wasn't the fact that I saw two aliens and a human alien hybrid, and saw what most frightened me was the other kids that were on there. The look of fear was like nothing I had ever really seen up at that point, you know, because
what were these?
Only 10.
You recall the aliens though, right? You recall
seeing them? I did. In fact, my father had in our garage, I actually did a drawings of these aliens, and I hadn't, my father covered them all up. And last year I had to rebuild my garage. So when I pulled it apart, I forgot that I had these drawings. I almost died seeing them. I mean, I just like, I had to sit down. And I would say the first one, there was a, looked a little like Yoda-like, except Star Wars hadn't happened yet. You know,
and the big and ears though?
A little bit bigger ears. You know, you'd swear to God that I could have had a copyright infringement against Star Wars. I mean, it was pretty, I was like, wow, that's amazing. And the other one was a female, long, scraggly, just drew long, scraggly hair, you know, just very long, scraggly hair, but the same thing, bigger eyes. And that's
a lot of people have said that they've seen children like that. With a long, scraggly hair.
Yeah.
They were hybrid.
I mean, I have long hair, but I'm not a hybrid.
Yeah, well.
I just wanted you to know that.
I don't wonder in there.
Yeah.
But the long, scraggly hair, they're hybrids, human-alien hybrids.
Well, you know, I talk about that in my book, you know, that they're, you know, they're here. They're here. I've seen them. I was given a note, which, you know, I don't know how much you got into the book, but.
I finished it today.
Yeah, they're here. Good. They're here. Excellent. Oh, but, thank you, sir.
That the one that you saw aboard that craft.
Right.
Could you say that one could walk among us or no?
Not with you couldn't. No, unless it was Halloween, you know. I mean, that was an obvious one.
Yeah.
You know, but the other person that I saw on that ship, no different than you and I.
And you recognize the fact that that person you're referring to was not one that had been abducted, but belonged there. What did they do with you?
At that, nothing really. I didn't think anything. You know, I mean, I was just shown around. Like I said, the first one was Melanie off to my right. I never found out who the first girl that I saw was on my left. Such a frightful look to look at. She was like just stunned. Now, then there was another girl, and I looked down, and the third girl, she ID'd me after watching Unsolved Mysteries and contacted me, and she saw my picture when I was 10 years old, and she goes, she was abducted the same night, and she ID'd me on that UFO. Which, you know, I don't know how many people have been ID'd on a UFO, but I happen to have been twice.
Yeah.
You know?
So what would you say the purpose of that tour of the craft was?
Well, you know, what was interesting was after I saw like a table, a table and instruments, and I'm seeing these lights because it was going around, it was reflecting in that. I was seeing still these flashing lights, like. Then I was put back down. I was eyewitnessed disappearing in the beam, and I was eyewitness when the beam put me back down on the ground, and I was literally laid out flat. When the last foot, I was fully conscious, and I landed. So I landed, and I'm in the beam, and my brother's yelling, "Run, Tommy, run!" And I can't. It's holding me down. And it was the most perplexing thing to think, you know, we used to play flashlight tag, you know, you're it, you know, but I was like, I can't believe this beam is whole. And it could communicate to me. It could talk to me. It said, you're okay. Just lay still. We'll be done in a minute. In a minute, the beam, we said, we're done. They told me we're done. The beam went off. I rolled to my right. I stood up and just looked at this thing and took it all in. And it just had to rise slowly to clear the trees, and off it went.
Was your brother on board that craft with you?
Not that time. See, what the Unsolved Mysteries didn't say is that there's a lot of things that weren't in that particular program, that the craft actually went from where we are to where I was on vacation 2 weeks prior to that. And in fact, the Plattsburgh Air Force Base interviewed the kids that night that were saw the UFO and get description and everything. Mm-hmm. What it doesn't say was 2 weeks later, exactly. I was having a catch. Don't ask me why I went outside, because I was so frightened to go outside. My brother says, oh, come on, Tommy. The sun hasn't gone down yet. There's plenty of light. Yeah, come on, Tommy. Let's go. Let's have a catch. I said, okay. So I get out there and I threw the ball to me. I threw it back. And then I threw the ball and I released the ball, and the ball went about 15 feet and the ball stopped and then shot past me. And I was like, I mean, I didn't even get my glove up. I mean, that ball went by me so fast. And I ran after the ball. And as I'm running after the ball, my other two brothers and neighbor are running up. They said, did you see the UFO? Did you see the UFO? It was right over Tommy's head. And I'm like, the only thing I could think was, here we go again. And they go, there it is. And they pointed it out in the sky. And it was, I'd have to say maybe 3/4 of a mile up in the sky, maybe a little more. But I recognized the lights. And then mental telepathy said again, you're okay now. You're okay.
Had they abducted you?
Lost 45 minutes in like a blink of an eye.
I would take that as a yes.
I would take that as a yes. As a matter of fact, 3 years later, I'm up on Lake Champlain and we're on this dock swimming, you know, and no one, when I mean no one knew about the UFO incident. We were not talking about it. And I, you know, a bunch of, you know, we're all about the same age and, you know, summer vacation on a beach. And it was almost supper time. And I said, oh, I got to go. It's almost my supper time. And I dove in the water to swim to shore. Another kid jumps in and he's swimming off to my right. And we get in and I stand up finally when I didn't have to swim anymore. And he looked at me and he goes, you know about UFOs? I didn't want to talk about it. I swear to God, I'm like, I know. I looked at him, I said, no. He said, yes, you do. I said, no, I don't. He said, yes, you do. I said, well, how would you know that? And he looked at me, he says, because I was on that UFO and I remember you and your brother. Hmm. And I was like, oh my God.
So obviously your brother was the second time anyway.
Yeah, he was up there. Yeah, he doesn't want to talk. I don't blame him, you know. So fair enough. Remember. Not everybody wants to talk about it, and not everybody wants to go public about it, and I totally respect that. And there are some people that talk about it. You know, after I did Unsolved Mysteries, there were people who contacted me that never, literally never talked about their UFO experiences. Mm-hmm. They won't. And I get calls from all over the world and people saying, well, because you came forward, I can talk about this now, you know? So I'm happy that I can be, you know, a voice for people that, you know, have seen things that most people haven't seen, you know? But that won't. He eventually didn't want to talk about it anymore either. It took many years, though.
But without delving into your brother's experience, he did recall being.
He remembers. Well, you know, it was I was always, you know, I was the youngest of seven. So, you know, he says to me, Tommy, you need to do hypnosis. I said, I remember enough. You know, I don't,
yeah.
You know, how much do you want to remember? You know?
Right.
I mean, the fact that, you know, I remember that I remembered Melanie. I remembered the other girl that was three down from me.
Right.
On that wall, it was like a bendy kind of wall, and it's like they could not move. They're just there, and they're like so frightened. And I remember looking at that girl. I remember looking right at that girl, looking at her, and telling her, "You'll be okay."
Did the inside of the craft appear to be larger than the 40 feet that you described it was from the outside?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. You know, you ever see Doctor Who? They always, you know, they project something small and it's bigger on the inside.
Right.
You know, it was like, it was, I know how long I was on it. I was on it approximately because I was witnessed
the first time I
disappeared. And they're frantically, where'd he go? 7 minutes later, back down. You know, so I know that I was there seven, that was 7 minutes. So in 7 minutes, I'm, you know, just all this activity. And like, why am I here? I was like, why am I here? You know, it was like.
It seems to be more of an introduction to you.
Oh, it was definitely an introduction, but this introduction, you know, like I, you read my book. So it's, this all started when I was as far back as I can remember. And it was, you know, so are some of us chosen? You know, I'm a humble person, you know, and I'm just a simple, you know, I'm an artist, I'm a poet, a historian, why me? I always said, why me?
You'd say it started earlier than that. What started earlier than that?
The mental telepathy.
Okay.
The mental telepathy. You know, it's, you know, to be able to, and communicating to me. And then, of course, when I was 4 years old, there was an attempted abduction of me at 4 years old. So, which.
Tell us about that.
Well, I was.
Not by aliens, but
well, no, I think they're human alien hybrids for sure.
Okay.
You know, I was, my parents, my father was working, my mother was off, and my grandfather was watching me. You know, I was the only one home. And I said to my grandfather, can I go out and play in the sandbox? I said, yeah, sure. Okay. No problem. But you know, back in the 1960s, you didn't really worry about abduction or anything like that. You know,
right.
you my mother would kick us out of the house, get us out, go play. You know how it was, you know? And I went by and this car went by, it went by real slow. You know, it was like, just and they cut at me and enough where I could see that there were three gals and three guys. And the three probably looked like, you know, they look old to me, which meant they were in their 20s.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, you know, 4 years, some of 20s, they're ancient, you know. My sister was in high school. I thought she was old, you know. You know, so anyway, so they all just like stared. I mean, they looked like Barbie dolls, you know, it looked like really something very surreal. And they went by and they just really looked at me, and then I could see they drove down the hill, and we live up on a hill, so the road from our road, you could see, we call them going around the block. So they go down the hill, come back Alford Road, and over, and then back around. I could see that that's what they were doing, because I could hear the car. So I was like, I hid behind the tree. And they went by real, real slow the second time. And they got past where the Shaw's house was, and they stopped. And at this point, I ran across the street. Why didn't I just run inside? I don't know. I just, my first thing was flight, run. And I ran, and I just hid right in the, there was brush and everything right there. And they slowly backed up, and all of a sudden the one woman says, "Come out, little boy, we have candy for you." Mm. And I have that mental telepathy that says, "Call your grandfather, but don't use your voice." And that's what I did. Mm. And my grandfather, my grandpa was a sharpshooter for the New York National Guard. And I mean, this guy could, you know, he'd look out and I didn't even know what to see. He'd look out and he'd see a gopher way out in our field in back of our house. And then 10 minutes later, the dog would come back and drop a gopher. You know, I mean, this guy had like, I mean, he won medals in the National Guard for marksmanship, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he came out and he announced, he said, "Driver, I'm a sharpshooter from the New York National Guard. If this car moves, you're dead." And he says, "I want my grandson." And I said, "I'm here, Grandpa." And he came out and he says, "Get back there, Tommy." And went up to the car. Now, I'd never seen any fear of my grandfather. I mean, this is a guy that was in the Spanish-American War, World War I. I mean, this guy was like, nothing scared him. And he went up to that car and the look on his face was like, he looked really scared. And I'm, you know, and he never did anything. He just said, walking back in, he says, "We're not going to tell anybody about this, Tommy. This is between you and me. We're not going to tell. This is our story. We're not going to, you don't even have to tell your mommy on this. You know, we're not going to talk about it." Okay, Grandpa, that's it. But when he looked at those people, he looked scared. Something that really frightened him, you know. And of course, he was an adult. I was only 4 years old, but it left such an impression with me. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why did they want to take me? You know, and they all, you know, I was a towhead. I mean, I was like as blonde as they were. I was blonder, you know. And it was like
they were blonde. They were blonde.
They were blonde. Yeah. Hmm. All three women look like they could have been triplets. I mean, they're identical.
Now that you know more about the UFO phenomenon and mm-hmm. different alien species, allegedly, would you say they may have been what we refer to as Nordics?
Well, you know, I didn't really, you know, I've come across a few human alien hybrids. could have been. I mean, they're just very unique. You know, I mean,
how did you know they were hybrids?
How did I know?
You say you've come across a few.
Oh yes,
and how did you know that they were hybrids?
Because they didn't blink.
They didn't blink.
Humans have to blink. It's just what it is. You know. And they also could talk to me through mental telepathy. And that was bizarre. I mean, all these things. It was traumatic enough that the September 1st, 1969 event. What made it more traumatic was it never stopped. And so I had no intent of telling this story. No way. And I agreed to do an interview. It was on Coast to Coast. I forget. It was Dr. J. Andy Ellis or something like that. And it was being broadcast. And I get a message from a woman in Italy who was watching it. And we grew up together up in summers on Lake Champlain. And she, now understand, summer after summer after summer, we would just sit out and look out at the stars. Well, we all said, "Oh, we're looking for shooting stars," but we all had UFO experiences and we didn't tell each other. And we didn't know until I did that interview and she was in Italy and she contacted me, Judy Clark. And Judy said, "Tom, we need to talk. We had the same thing happen the same night." And I was like, "Oh my God." And I said, okay. So I did the interview and then I was interviewed by New England Legends and I was only on there for like one line. I said, "How close were you?" I said, "If I had a baseball, I could have pinged it." Mm-hmm. That's how close it was. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, then that's the line that was went in that TV show. I could have pinged it. And, of course, it probably wouldn't have been a very good idea, you know. To,
wouldn't have mattered.
It wouldn't have mattered. They wouldn't have given my baseball back. They probably would have kept the baseball, you know. We didn't have a lot of those back then.
They said, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm listening. Go ahead.
They say that if they shot at these things from ships,
right?
They shot at UFOs,
and right,
all of a sudden they find they're being shot at, and when they checked out the that came back to the ship,
mm-hmm,
came back to the U.S. Naval ship,
right?
They found that that was their own munitions. In other words, they shot out here,
and they returned it.
They returned it. They weren't shooting right at them. They were returning their fire.
Well, you know, I find it, you know, as I delve into this more, you know, because people ask me all the time, different opinions, you know, different experiences that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
There, as you investigate these stories, you have to keep an open mind that the unbelievable can be believable. Things that we don't understand can be really true. For instance, I talk about in my book about the loss of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I question time, you know, because we perceive time differently. You know, okay, when you're a little kid, you go like, you know, I can't wait till I'm 16. And tick, 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 tick.
Takes forever. Yeah.
Takes forever. Or here's an example for you, and I talk about this one. I was in a high-speed crash over 100 miles into a stone wall. And in that time for the first impact at 100 miles an hour, my whole entire life flashed before me.
Mm-hmm.
Details. Now, logic would say you cannot even watch a film at a short period of time. An accident takes place at 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Impossible. But time was somehow altered.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like, it was slowed down. And now going back to the second time on the UFO, I threw the ball to my brother. It went by. It went from the sun was going down to I'm chasing the ball after I just released it. And now the stars are out. That's over 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the sun goes down. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, first star I see tonight, all that. That's over 5 minutes. But it was in a split second. So how is it that time could go from in a split second, 45 minutes, or at 100 miles an hour, it slowed down? So it made me think about, you know, how do we perceive time itself? You know, and I talked to some other people and they go like, how is it, you know, they warp time and we don't understand it. We don't, you know, if we could go back, okay, and if you could go back in time and have an F-15 fighter and mirror back 220 or whatever in 1776, and you buzzed over Boston, they go, God just sent something. They would like be shocked. They would be just totally shocked. And so we have this phenomenon where people have seen UFOs. They don't want to talk about it because of the ridicule. That I mean, I've heard every joke. I've heard every probing joke. I've heard them all, you know, and it's like you wackadoodles and everything. But I tell you, I've seen people that were reputable. In fact, I talk about one in my book where, you know, he was an Air Force pilot. And, you know, he was considering suicide because they literally threw him out of the Air Force. And he said the same things that I said, the same things. He said about the telepathy. He reached a deck and he had a lock on a UFO, And he says, before I could push the button to fire on this thing, it's mental telepathy. They said to him, don't shoot. Do not shoot. And before he could even push the button, They were gone, just like that. He says, nothing, nothing. We don't have any, nothing. He says, if they flew away, like just straight up gone.
Yeah.
And when he got back, they said, you know, it didn't happen. Here you go. You got to sign it. It didn't happen. Right. So the government, you know, they've been playing this game for a long time. You know, you talk about, say, Project Blue Book, which was like, okay, we're going to have Project Blue Book here. We're going to really open up and tell all you people everything you want to know.
Project Whitewash, I call it.
I agree with you, because that incident in September 1st, 1969 was not in there. The Plattsburgh Air Force Base investigated that. They took testimony from those kids. They had those kids do drawings. They knew about it. Mm-hmm. They described that the UFO went across Lake Champlain in 1 second. Just like that. Mm-hmm. That's 6 miles in less than a flash. That's just under 22,000 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Eyewitnessed.
Yeah.
So you say, okay, so why is this all... they're being nice guys. You know, they're nice guys for a reason. You know, we went to do this interview. They knew the Unsolved Mysteries was going to come out with a major story. They knew that because we had contacted the Air Force about getting their perspective about all this stuff, because we said, hey, it was investigated in 1969. You know, we gave them details to say what we knew. Mm-hmm. And it went up the chain of command. But when it came back down in the chain of command, it was copied and ended up I ended up with a copy of that letter. And the head title on it from the top was hot. So they knew that Unsolved Mysteries was, they didn't say what they had for a story, but they said they're doing a breaking story on UFOs. And so prior to this airing on July 1st, they came out with the Navy, said, oh, we have these. Oh, yeah. By the way, we have this videotape. So since that's happened, so much has come out. You know, I mean, I've done interviews all over the world. I mean, groups have asked me to interview and what I've seen and, you know, because now it went from a bunch of, you know, wackos, you know, to like, wow, this is real.
Yeah.
And now they're coming out with more, you know, but, you know, this stuff was, they had to protect the public.
Yeah. Understood.
You know, I have now, great respect for that.
Now, what do you think about the fact that the Pentagon admits they're real, the Navy, Air mm-hmm. Force?
I've known it since I was 10. You know, I knew it was real. And yeah. In fact, you know, there was that one section, and you know, where a high-ranking member of an organization, you might say, sat me down to tell me about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I was asked, would I be interested at the time? I was asked, would I be interested in going to a special school?
For what? Special school?
Special school, special training.
Huh. X-Men or what?
Yep. It wasn't X-Men, but it was Men in Black kind of stuff. Yeah.
Really? Really?
They asked me what I could do. And I showed them what I could do.
They explained this to you?
It was the daughter of someone that was in the Men in Black.
Okay, so the special school, you know, was to train you for
whatever.
Quote, Men in Black.
Yeah, I said no. I declined. It's like, no.
Okay.
Well, you know, well, I mean, it was what it was.
The Men in Black, there are our people. They're our government.
Well, they work with our government anyway. Our government knows a lot more than they're going to talk about. They're not. They're, I mean, so, you know, I was always one of these guys that saw things before they even happened. I knew about all this stuff, you know? And these Project Men in Black and the project that came out of Montreal and some of the things that they did, and, you know, it all comes under different jurisdictions. And I want to tell to the government, listen, I think you're doing a great job. you know, look, they know where I am.
So from what you know about this quote unquote special school, et cetera.
I never got into it. I didn't want to know anymore. I just declined.
We'll say, in your opinion, are they human?
Well, you got to remember this. Okay, so you got to go all the way back to World War II. So after World War II, you know, the Germans thought we had special weapons, and the Americans thought that the Germans had special weapons, and they called them Foo Fighters. And so after the war, it was this rush to get whoever had the intelligence. You know, they wanted to know intelligence, and so there was a push to find you know different capabilities that certain humans had, and one of the top ones was mentioned was mental telepathy. To, you know, and it's just something that I had. It's, you know, was I born with it? Probably, you know, just, yeah. You know.
I think we all have that ability. Some people, you know, that sense is sharper.
Right. I tried to avoid all this. I didn't want anything to do with it. Nothing. I just walked away from it. Mm-hmm. And then the pace started picking up, and, you know, this mental telepathy was saying, you know, no, you're going to have a role to play. Yeah. And I'm like, no, you know. And the next thing I know, I'm getting calls from Boston, would I be interviewed and this. And everything slowly came out. But I started writing my autobiography before I was even approached by Unsolved Mysteries, and I was doing it because I wanted it recorded what I had experienced, and just so that I could tell the story. That was it. I have the manuscript here, the original, and it was like I did it. I just wanted to record it. But as I was writing it, I realized I had to open up and tell the truth. And I had to, you know, face that I've had strange things happen to me. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't get into everything in 6 hours, let alone an hour interview. But it you know, you read the book, so you know things happened to prove it was being proven to me that this was real, and the part about another planet was real, and, you know, like when you have memory is encoded. So depending on the degree of trauma or whatever you might say. So, like, for instance, when I was 5 and I fell through ice, I remember what it felt. I remember how I can look right now, and I can look right down that frozen river as I'm holding onto the ice above me. I was only 5 years old. But that imprinted in me, I can recall. The human brain has allowed us to recall these things. So you can come back and you can say, okay, whether it's a happy memory, oh, I remember, you know, believing in Santa and it snowed and my brothers were making noise up on the roof. And these are, you know, different memories are great, you know. I can remember when my children were born. And we recall memory, and it's like a movie can be played back on recall. It's like a computer. I recall this. And so I have this memory, you know, of my life. But I also have another film that plays that's not from here. Whether that was put in when I was 10, I have no idea. But it's of another planet. And they can communicate to me. And it sounds wacky and everything, but it's true.
I need to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're talking to Mr. Tom Warner, who is an author, artist, and alien experiencer. So let's get back to that interview now. So after all of these life experiences so far, and hopefully mm-hmm. you've got a lot more to go.
Well, I hope so. Okay, we're good.
What would you say your takeaway from these experiences is?
There's no doubt about it. We're at a turning point for humanity. You know, I did this to help people. It's not for fame and, you know, or selling books. Cause right. you know, you write a book, you sell a book and you're communicating.
You don't get rich, right?
You're not getting rich. You do it for a particular reason. You know, it's the same way. Why did I do paintings? You know, and yeah, I'm famous for my artwork and everything. It's because you want to express something, but this is a little different. And this is a platform. And it's a platform to talk to other people and to try to get to that platform where you can say, look, we need to take care of this earth. We're messing up big time with it. And if we ever want to see humanity to advance from where we are, the speed at which technology happens, 100 years from now, we might be able to go to other planets. I mean, think about, you know, like my grandfather, he was amazed when the first rocket blasted off. He says, you don't understand. He said to my sister, I rode the stagecoach. Now I'm watching rockets take off. Well, wasn't long since 1969, someone landed on the moon. Now we're putting people, you know, talking about somebody putting people on Mars. They wouldn't have believed that 1960 is coming at such a rapid pace. But the cost of it is that we can only go so far if we're going to destroy the earth, because we're not getting off here anytime soon.
Do you feel that ET has instilled this in your mind as to taking care of the earth?
100%.
Are
100%. Everything that was shown to me, you know, examples of, you know, things I would see events before they happened. And what's the purpose of that? Is to get me to pay attention. And yeah. Wow, I had a number of them, as you know, and it's just so that I paid attention, and then I'm on another platform, you know, whether it continues, I don't know. I mean, I've had people say, you know, we want to do a movie on your life and to get into all those details to say, what is it about life from other planets that's so unique? Because it touches on the human brain in ways that is never discussed. It's never discussed. It touches on spirituality of a human being, the soul of a human being, the communication of a human being to other, from beings to beings, from planet to planet. Mm-hmm. It touches on all that stuff. But to get there, we have to take care of what we have right now.
Yeah.
And you know, this idiotic stupidity of humans, of wars, is so stupid, because most of it's over. It's either over my dog's bigger than your dog, my weapon's bigger than your weapon, or it's over, well, my religion's right and your religion's wrong. But all religions are spirituality, and they're just trying to find out what they feel in their hearts, right or wrong, you know. And then it's politicized. Religion's politicized. Politics is politicized. And nature doesn't care.
No.
And the truth is, you know, there are aliens walking among us, and they have come up to me personally.
Just have to watch to see if they blink, right?
you know, I'll tell you your people story real quick about that. So the first person I went up to, it was the Silvio Conti Research Center. And Silvio Conti was a congressman here in Massachusetts. And the place was going to close, but I wanted to go up and do a little bit of research before it closed, because great place. And I walk in the place, and I look at Silvio Conti's desk, and I'm looking at it, and an alarm goes off. I'm like, damn, I didn't touch anything. And a guy comes down. I'm like, oh, I didn't touch it. You know, I mean, because it's a federal crime, you know, taking a pencil from a congressperson. You know, I mean, you can't touch any of that stuff. You know, it's roped off everything. And I said, I didn't touch anything. He goes, well, the alarm went off. I said, fair enough. I said, but I didn't touch anything. So he goes, okay, come on in. And so we went in the center, and he says, there's just one guy over in the corner over there. Just, it's the three of us in this building. That's it. And as I'm typing, all of a sudden, I get this feeling. All of a sudden, the guy walks up to me. He goes, you need a program looking for something, looking for anyone? I said, well, yeah, sort of. And he says, stand back. And he gets on my computer. He goes, like, and I'm on this program, and I was on that program. I could look up anyone. Hmm. And so I'm like, well, I don't want to take advantage of this too much. You know, I was a little freaky that he could get on like that. But what I couldn't understand was, how did he type so fast? I mean, it was like nothing I've ever seen. And then he walked up to me, and then he asked me, he asked me about a certain subject about it was on the Masons, and it was on Knights Templar, and just weird questions and stuff. And he was asking about a painting that I inherited, and the painting that I inherited, it was an allegorical painting. And in that painting, which was from 1903. And in the painting, in a section of this one apple, the artist had put in a sketch of himself. And then when you blew up the picture, there was another image of something else. And the third image was an alien. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa. And he wanted to know where the painting was. Was it safe? All those things, you know? So before I left, I was getting spooked out, and the director, whoever ran the place, came up to me. He says, did you see where that guy went? I said, no. He says, well, he didn't go by me. He says, stay right here. If he comes by you, let me know. Well, fair enough. So he comes back. He goes, he's gone. I'm like, what do you mean he's gone? He vanished. I'm like, well, you know, I was spooked up because the guy didn't blink. And I thought, wow. I said, well, you're on your own. I said,
I'm out of here.
You know, if I see a ghost, boom, I'm out of here. So I left. And then I got home, and there was a note in my bag. So I called the guy up. I said, did you leave a note in my bag? He says, no. He says, that guy must have left a note. And I'm like, I didn't know what it meant. And I didn't find out what it meant. But one person did confirm that they had seen, heard that. And they were in special forces. and they were guarding a top location with shoot to kill orders, and they saw a human. It was an alien, gray alien that they were protecting.
Are you talking about the N'Gog we trust?
N'Gog. And he wrote down what the one was saying to the other.
And what did that mean?
I think it's Egyptian. I don't I never found out, but he just wrote on back. He did a drawing of what he saw, and he sent me that note, which is in that book.
All right.
And he wrote, "Whoever gave you that knows way too much." And that was my first encounter with a human alien hybrid.
Okay.
And the second time, I was in a grocery store, just grocery store, local grocery store. Got my list for my wife. Gonna push that cart fast, and I see this woman. She looked. It's like she looked familiar. Couldn't, you know. I'm like, I'm terrible with faces anyway, you know. And I go in the next aisle, and there she is again. I'm thinking, like, this is bizarre, you know. And then I turn around. I see her in the next aisle. I think, is she following me? This is really strange, you know. But, you know, I just have a short list, and I'm trying to go fast because my wife's going to get out of her work, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I finished up my shopping, and I went to get in line, and she cut in front of me. She didn't have anything, and she takes a candy bar and she pays with a 20. And she looks right at me, and she's not blinking. She just like this tear right through me. And she goes, "I know." She goes, "You're the artist." I said, "I honestly," when she said, "You're the artist," I was like, "Wow!" She recognized I'm an artist, you know. And I handed her my card, and she goes, "I don't need your card. I know where you live. I know who you are." She goes, "I was here to protect you. You're safe now." And she walked away. And I'm like, what the hell is that about? Right. So I left, tried to find her. I got out of there as fast as I could. Didn't see her out in the parking lot. Had to go pick up my wife. And I went to pick up my wife. And she goes, "How'd you get that burn in your jacket?" There was a hole right in my jacket. Burned right through. I never felt it.
Is it on your skin?
No, it burned through, burned right through the jacket. Didn't set the next thing, but burned right through it.
Wow.
Of course, I took a picture of that. You know, I mean, it's like,
yeah.
She never blinked. But,
well, I appreciate you sharing this with us. Now, with respect to Tom Warner, there is a medical condition involving the eyes not blinking. Although very rare, it's called lagathymosis, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And, but it, like I say, it is very rare condition. That taken in consideration with all the folks that Mr. Warner have encountered in his life and their strange behavior, especially those three folks in a car that tried to abduct him, none of which their eyes blinked, or did not blink, I should say. I would tend to lean toward the fact that perhaps these people who didn't blink did not have this condition, but were not of this world. That aside, there was some strange phenomenon which happened to Mr. Tom Warner and witnessed by others. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. Please check out my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again on our new day and time, which is the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. That's the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.